News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
What's going on, Dan and Dalton? FM Talk 106.5, 8.07, overcast skies, about 68 degrees, kind of warm and muggy out there a little bit. We may see a shower in the afternoon.
Yeah, a much-needed shower, but not the coverage we necessarily need to get over this drought we've been experiencing. And I think Dr. Bill said so far, you know, 3 months into 2026, we're about 8-9 inches below average for total rainfall.
It's a bunch.
So there are some showers in the forecast and possibly a thunderstorm tomorrow. But it is good to see at least a little rain in that forecast, finally. Joining us this morning, as he does every Tuesday morning, is Quinn Hillier. You can find his writing online at quinnhillier.com, but also he writes for NOLA.com, The Advocate, and we'll be talking some Louisiana politics at some point in this segment. But good morning, Quinn.
Good morning, guys. Hope y'all are doing well.
We are doing well.
Yeah, doing fine. And the primary's on the way here, May 19th, I believe, primary voting day. And some big races statewide and certainly some locally, but we're seeing more and more campaign ads as we head towards that date, Quinn. And some of these races, even ones you wouldn't think would be contentious, getting a little heated.
Well, they really are. And look, the one time I ran for office, I took a pledge not to do any negative campaign ads against anybody else. I could draw distinctions on issues, which I didn't even do that in ads, but I said I would not go after anybody personally, et cetera. So obviously I just don't like the style, but, you know, sometimes they can be negative, but they can be accurate. I have made a habit, and you can go back and look, but over years and years, I've made a habit of sort of policing negative ads that were either untrue, inaccurate, or that were, even if technically accurate, they were so out of context that they amounted to cheap shots. And I've done it against both parties. I've done it against candidates I supported and candidates I oppose. So it has nothing to do with who I'm supporting in a race. And I saw negative ads, and there are a lot of them out there now. The one that caught my attention, because I saw it, my wife actually complained about it, was from Doug Harwell against Rusty Glover in the state Senate race. And this was the latter category that's technically accurate, but no need to do it and out of context. And I'd like to talk about that if I can.
Yeah, let's talk about that. And both of these men, pretty well known in our area, Doug Harwell and, of course, Rusty Glover, well known in Alabama politics for some time now, and being a teacher and involved in so many people's lives throughout their youth, Glover also has that, too. So what is the negative ad? What's the kind of how would you say this was, you said, maybe not inaccurate, but a cheap shot of sorts?
Yeah, and let me preface it by saying, you know, I don't know Doug Harwell, but I've always thought well of him. He seemed to do a good job on the school board. I've always heard good things about him. I just don't know why he's got to, rather than boost himself, why he's got to go so negative against another good man, Rusty Glover. But the two things he says in the ad, and they, you know, it's with this music or this this video that is, you know, spooky and scary and, you know, the typical things that they do, makes two accusations against Rusty Glover that are just not fair. I mean, they're accurate, but not fair. One is, it says, Rusty Glover took a pay raise, blah, 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 voted for a big pay raise. And first of all, that's only part of the story. Rusty Glover voted for a pay raise for state legislators when the pay had not been raised in years and years and years. And then he turned around and voted for a constitutional amendment that would lower the pay back, but then afterwards tie it to inflation so it would have regular increases, you know, that would just keep up with the cost of living, so that so that you wouldn't ask legislators once every 20 years to make what looked like a huge jump, but was actually just keeping up with the cost of living. So it was a thing where you vote for something to get it to where it really should be, but then immediately say, we are now going to give you a chance to cut it back down some, but then make it reasonable going forward. So just if you take those two things together, what he's doing is you know, not some outrageous money grab, but giving a vote to the people to say, do they want this system to change so that you have automatic cost of living adjustments, which is what everybody else gets from the government. Your Social Security check goes up every year, et cetera, et cetera. So that's the first thing. I would also say that there is quite an argument to be made anyway that all this bit about, oh, going against legislative pay, you know, is what you should do, that actually doesn't make sense. If you only pay a pittance, a very small amount, for legislators, guess what? The only people who can afford to run for office are those who are already independently wealthy. And that means you take away the ability of sort of, I don't want to say ordinary people, but ordinary income people to actually go and run and serve. So it's self-defeating. You're limiting the ability of people to run and of people to vote, you know, to have more choices. So just on a substantive level, it's, I think, a bad thing to oppose reasonable pay raises. So that's the pay raise issue, and I'll be quiet, but there's a second issue, but I'll let you all.
Well, yeah, go ahead and bring the second issue, because I want to talk about how rare, or is it that rare, that in a state Senate race you see the elbows flying like this, because this all or at least gained my attention when the push polling began, right? And former Senator Glover said that the push poll was basically inaccurate and pushing some of those same things that you're discussing right now about the pay raise and state's education fund and things of that nature. And then you had Glover come out and say, well, Harwell's receiving PAC money from pro-gambling groups. I mean, this is a state Senate race. Mm-hmm. Normally not this contentious.
It's a state Senate race, and it's especially a shame when you have two people that are pretty much known as good guys.
Yeah.
So why not run on your own record and your own vision and not tear down the other guy? Okay, I mean, it just bothers me. But the second thing is, he's hitting Rusty Glover. The ad says he took more money for himself, but then he made you pay more because supposedly Rusty Glover voted for what the ad says is a sales tax increase. What that was is a local option sales tax, like they have all through the state. If a locality wants to change their tax rate, they literally have to go to Montgomery to put something on the ballot that everybody all across the state votes on, right? Which makes no sense in the first place. So Baldwin County, which Rusty Glover doesn't even represent, they locally passed this tax for schools or something. I forget what it was for. And then they had to take it to the legislature. The legislature, the state Senate, unanimously approved putting it on the ballot. Okay, so this is not controversial. Unanimous. Harwell is attacking Glover for Glover giving the locals in Baldwin what they wanted, joining every other member of the Senate, including the state senators from Baldwin County, who are among the most conservative anti-tax legislators there are. So all this was saying, yes, you can have your local option and let your people choose if they want to have this tax.
Mm-hmm. You know,
and yet he's being attacked as if he's raised taxes on everybody across the state. That's a cheap shot, even though it's technically accurate.
Okay, but I mean, Rusty Glover's got, in my way of thinking, an excellent reputation around here. So I think a lot of people that see an ad like that would take it for what it is. Like, you know, this is somebody has combed you know, it was somebody's job to comb his voting history and then come up with something that they could finagle in this way. I think Rusty's known as such a good dude that I don't know how many votes this would sway away from him.
Well, I don't know, but why do this? Why go so negative, especially when Harwell served a number of years on the school board?
Yes.
He was well regarded. I think he was regarded as a conservative reformer. Run on his own record and vision. Don't tear down somebody with, again, technically accurate, but out of context, misleading, nasty ads. I don't get it.
And I don't know if in this particular race it applies, excuse me, but in so many of these races that get really, really down and dirty. I mean, we were talking about the Club for Growth ad that was spent through the PAC. What's the PAC here? I forget what they called it. So it's Club for Growth, and then the Alabama Freedom Fund, who's being bankrolled by Club for Growth Action, put out these ads about Steve Marshall, the attorney general.
Yeah, it's for Barry Moore, and it has very little to do with Barry Moore in the ad itself. It's all about Marshall. It's one of those,
Quinn, that I was saying, and we saw a lot of it during the presidential election, where you're watching something on TV, and if the family's in the room, it's when the political ads come on that you have to slap the mute button because some of the stuff is so vulgar on there. And I guess and then you have candidates who can hide behind that pack. Oh, Barry would never do something like that. That's not him. That's Club for Growth. Okay. But the message is still being put out there on behalf of a certain candidate. So I guess I thought years and years ago, I thought forever we've been trying to fix campaign finances and campaign advertising to the point where you at least know who is putting what message out there and why they're doing it, and that candidates have to take some kind of responsibility for what's being put out there on their behalf?
Well, no. See, you can't really have candidates take responsibility for what an independent third party does or says. In fact, that was part of the Citizens United court decision, which I actually had a very small bit to do with. I was in the room when Citizens United, I was literally one of four people in the room when Citizens United hired the lawyer to take that case. But the key is that the candidate must not actually have control over what the third party says. And if there is coordination with the third party, that's illegal. But you know, you can't say that I don't have a right to go stand on my porch and yell that such and such candidate is a jerk. That's free speech. So you can't necessarily blame the candidate, except that the candidate can send hints. And if the candidate is saying, oh, well, Steve Marshall is a jerk, you know, and I don't like what he did here. And then, you know, he says that a couple of times, and then he's quiet, and then Club for Growth hears you say that just two times and says, oh, that's what he really wants me to be saying, and Club for Growth takes it and runs. Well, he didn't tell Club for Growth to say that, but he sent the signal. So it's a sort of a dicey game. That is, though, why they always have those disclaimers at the end of an ad, so-and-so paid for this ad. And that's about as good as they can do to tell people who is actually paying for it. But, yeah, is there some wink, wink, nod, nod? Yes, there is.
Yeah, for me, these packs are just, and I know it's just a personal thing, just still a little too shadowy for me that they're able to set up kind of these shadow packs under shadow packs, and then the money's spent, and at the end of it, you don't really know who's spending it or why.
And in the Dalton, in the local election that we were talking about, that Quinn started the conversation with Harwell and Glover, is there such a disclaimer at the end, or is that just his local team that put that together? I don't know which. Quinn, are you aware of if there is a disclaimer that, or is that simply?
I didn't even notice. I'm sure there must be. I mean, that, you know, by law there must be such a disclaimer.
Well, but the disclaimer could be this was approved by Doug Harwell, correct? That could be one of the disclaimers if it's
a personal
one. Yeah,
exactly. Well, so, you know, and again, I it's not that I'm going after.
No, I get it.
Harwell in particular because I think he's a good dude.
Yeah.
But this campaign stinks. And look, back when Senator Shelby, who I didn't have anything against, was running for re-election against Jonathan McConnell, and he was winning big anyway. Jonathan McConnell's from here, great young guy, and for whatever reason, Shelby decided to teach him a lesson and came out with these horrible negative ads against McConnell. I went on my own website and I blasted the living crap out of Shelby. Even though, you know, before that, I didn't have much against Shelby. But it's just decency. You don't need to stoop this low.
I know we want to save a little time because you want to talk about your dad. And so why don't we get to the break here and so we're able to do that when we get back with you. Okay, Quinn?
Okay, sure. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll take a really quick break. Come back with Quinn Hillier. Text line is open, 251-343-0106. Mobile Mornings continues.
Have a traffic tip or your own take on the news? Text the guys at 251-343-0106 on Mobile Mornings.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings with Quinn Hillier. About to learn a little bit about Haywood Hillier.
The third. And big congratulations, Quinn, on your father's induction into the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame. And had the ceremony Saturday night in New Orleans. Shame on me. I did not realize the stellar career that your father had as a in Louisiana politics.
Well, thank you. And most people didn't because he was very behind the scenes. He was a volunteer. Never asked for any business for it. Never asked for any business for his friends or clients. He was one of these volunteer leaders. He served 25 years on the Louisiana State Central Committee, the last five of them on the Republican National Committee. There's only one committee man from each state and one committee woman and a chairman. He was there at the William F. Buckley Estate in 1960, only one of 100 young people invited from across the country to found what became Young Americans for Freedom, which was a very big power in youth politics for about 20 years and helped organize the whole conservative movement. He was, you know, there in all the early Republican campaigns from literally when there were fewer than 10,000 registered Republicans in the whole state of Louisiana.
Wow.
The joke that you could have the state convention in a phone booth because there were so few people. And he just went about his business, made the phone calls, went to the meetings, organized the walk list, or you know, stuffed the envelopes, and helped build the party. And then at the end of his service, when he was on the national committee, it's when David Duke had his 3 years of a heyday. And my dad, to his credit, moved heaven and earth to keep Duke, the neo-Nazi David Duke, who was for some reason very popular for 3 years. He kept him from grabbing control of the levers of the actual organized state party. There was an incident
where he physically kept him from grabbing control. That was quite a story.
Yeah, he was. Duke was at a state convention for governor where he was going to lose the endorsement very badly and wanted to create a diversion, rushed the stage when there was a break in the action. And my dad was the only one on stage, and he saw him. My dad was much smaller than Duke, but he stood there. He literally adopted a blocking stance, like a halfback, picking up a blitz.
Mm-hmm.
Duke threw aside a chair, tried to go around him. Dad threw aside a chair, adopted the stance again. Then Duke threw aside another chair and ran to the podium. But by that time, the state chairman had gotten there and kept Duke away, and Duke was left walking weakly around the stage looking like a weakling.
So. Wow. You talk about, is there video of that? And that would be something to see.
Yeah, was that on TikTok?
No, it was before the days of TikTok. But no, my dad really worked, and again, most of it way behind the scenes until he took a very public stand against Duke. But I was very honored that the Louisiana Political Hall of Fame recognized him. You know, he died in 2010, and all these years later recognized him. And this is not just Republican Hall of Fame.
It's
political Hall of Fame, Republicans and Democrats, and it was quite an honor. I was delighted.
Wow. Well, congratulations once again. Was he a Saints fan by any chance? It sounds like he had some form, some linebacker
yes,
form.
He was, he was a small guy, 5'8", 150, but yes, he was a Saints fan, and when he was in law school, he was the quarterback of the law school intramural football team.
How about that?
Awesome.
Great stuff. Quinn, thanks a bunch. People want to read your stuff, tell them where to go.
You can just Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA, NOLA.com, or go to QuinnHillier.com and subscribe for free.
Okay. Thanks for your time.
Thanks,
and a great story this morning. We'll talk again in 1 week.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
You got it.
Quinn Hillier. Again, you can find his work online, and quite the story about his dad there. We're getting a couple texts about the campaign advertisements and throwing bows as we're seeing more and more of the dirty boxing as we head towards the primary. And we had a story earlier about response from one of the family members referenced in that Club for Growth ad attacking Steve Marshall.
Right.
We might get back to that, but plenty of news regarding the Iran war as well. And your text, most importantly, as we turn up your voice, 251-343-0106 right here on Mobile Mornings.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
It looks like he developed some fans this morning.
What? I don't believe it.
Jason agrees with him about the negative ads. So he says, I don't often agree with Quinn Hillier, but he does as far as local ads and the situation that as he sees it.
Yeah, and you know, not all of these, especially the local races, are as dirty boxing as some of the big ones, but am I on an island here? And I'm no prude at all, but the fact that sometimes the politics are basically R-rated, or at the very least PG-14, not even PG-13, we're talking PG-14 here, something seems kind of off about that. I mean, we've gotten into this new phase, and, you know, Trump, he plays a pretty big hand in it. And I'll say that, even though I like a lot of what he was saying when he was trolling a lot of people. But they're comfortable now on the campaign stump, you know, when they're out in front of people dropping F-bombs and S-bombs and just cussing like they're at a bar.
Yeah, total lack of civility.
Or even in these ads, like I was talking about, going into the presidential election where I'm watching football or some kind of programming. Maybe it's like, you know, on CBS or Fox at night and the kids are in the room and an ad comes on and they go, this person loves rapists. And it's not necessarily language that would be edited off of a clean CD, but it's still stuff that makes you uncomfortable. And you're like, I really don't want my children hearing this. And honestly, I'm kind of tired of hearing it too. It's, but am I, like, the only one that is completely over all of that? Like, I know that you have to get down and dirty in a lot of these campaigns, but it seems like so often you see in regular language, like, using vulgarity because you don't have any other line of attack, it seems to me sometimes. And I'm just kind of over it. And then you add into the fact that very often those ads come from shadowy campaigns that are being funded by some PAC that has created shadow companies or PACs underneath it and trying to wind through that maze to figure out, all right, who is spending this money to say these things and why might they be doing it? I thought we went through this massive push for years and years.
Clean it up.
About cleaning that up and making it more obvious who are the players in these politics. And I think through all of that, like so many things that happen when the government gets involved, it's become even worse. It's become even harder to distinguish who's saying what and who's spending money on what.
Yeah, and the bottom line is this, too. They're not doing it to get their jollies. They're not doing it because they're saying, look how smartly we put together, you know, to win some sort of an Addy Award, which you won, by the way.
No, wow, thank you.
We'll get to that. But, you know, they're doing it because they think that's the best way to secure their goal, which is for their candidate to win.
Yeah.
So if they didn't think it was going to help them win, if they thought that having Mr. Rogers do their ads and just be a fuddly-duddly nice guy and say, my opponent, I don't really, I kind of like him.
Yeah.
But in the end, I think that some of his policies could be harmful. If they thought that was the best way to secure the win, that's what they would do.
Mm.
So they either have the data or the history that backs up. Go in hard. It can help. Now, I'm not quite sure about the Marshall thing because you were talking about polling. It doesn't look like it's really, has it really helped Moore's polling since that commercial came out?
I don't know. I think it's tough to tell because remember the poll that came out last week was a Club for Growth poll.
Yeah.
Not that it was necessarily slanted.
Yeah.
Like that may have been the actual numbers, but with the name on it, considering they endorsed Moore, kind of more of a grain of salt you have to take that with compared to maybe a more standardized polling operation. But this more recent poll that just came out, and I had it listed somewhere along here, it has 22.8% of the vote going to Moore. I want to say I have the numbers right here. It is 22.8% for Moore, 20.7% for Steve Marshall, 19% for Jared Hudson.
Interesting.
Who I think has been, and the numbers show it, doing a fantastic job of putting his name out there and letting folks know who he is, considering what he's up against in two established names, Moore and Marshall. And I don't know if he's been, I don't think he's been going after them the same way they've been going after each other.
No, his messaging has been very clear. We got to get him on the mornings, and I reached out to his people, and somehow me reaching out to his people resulted in him being on Jeff's show right after us.
And,
so I might have to go directly to Jared.
So he's 19%. You still have 35% undecided. This is according to this new poll here. So whether it's the attack ads on behalf of Club for Growth, that Club for Growth is putting out there, whether that's helping more, I would say it's more likely the Trump endorsement and then the money that arrived behind Moore after that is helping him with these numbers. And you talked about, well, these candidates, they wouldn't be doing this if it wasn't working. And you're exactly right. And I think sometimes I do get a little too idealistic, and it's usually Jeff or Sean that kind of have to slap some sense back into me and go, well, this is what works. And
yep.
So often our listeners and us who are reading these stories and meeting these candidates and talking about these issues every day, we aren't the focus of those ads. It's usually, and I guess I don't mean this as a slight, geared towards the lowest common denominator, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how you get the most votes, is by appealing to the most people. And probably most people aren't thinking and talking about these politics day in and day out.
Right. You're right. Did you know it was Hudson that got me involved with Jeremy Clark, who I had on the show on Friday.
Yeah.
The
Vets to Cowboys.
Vets to Cowboys initiative. So it was Jared Hudson who got me involved with him when I met up with him. So I've got a chance to speak with him, but we haven't had him on the show yet. But I thought that was noteworthy. Like, he's working with vets. I mean, he didn't have to meet with Jeremy Clark, but he did, and then passed it along to me. Like, you really want to meet this guy. You want to talk to him, find out what he's doing.
The veteran community is just something to behold, especially around here.
And I think, you know, fewer and fewer veterans are now running for office. We've seen those facts as well.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously so many back in the day were actually fighting.
Yes.
In the big wars.
Yeah.
And it's not so much the case anymore, but we do see many more special operators getting into politics.
Yep.
And I find that kind of fascinating, too, how it does seem that more go into GOP politics than Democrat politics.
Yep.
But there are special operators who retire and come back and get into politics and are on the Democrat side of things.
Yep.
So it's kind of funny how that shakes out sometimes.
Yeah, I think that Hudson is doing a very good job of getting his message out, and it's very tied to the military. It's tied to the state of Alabama, to the port of Mobile or Alabama, whatever you want to call it, all the way up to Huntsville. He really sees a correlation between all these entities in the state of Alabama, national defense, and Alabama being a leader.
Yeah, speaking of that, and I want to point you again to an interview that Sean Sullivan had yesterday that I enjoy every time that former Congressman Bradley Byrne is on the station and on Sean's show. And I know plenty of people have their own thoughts about his politics while he was in office, but I think what he has done and has been doing as president, CEO of the Mobile Chamber, it's hard to not look at what is being built industry-wise in Mobile and to prop up that industry through schools and training, and not be optimistic about the future of our region right here.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, so many of the things that Byrne laid out yesterday, whether it was just about that announcement that was one of our three big things, the Navy investing so much money into our community colleges down here to send more people to build ships.
Yeah, to develop the workforce. Yeah.
And that's, of course, a big initiative of Trump's this term. But also, he had such great insight into the war that's going on right now and so much more. But as far as job creation and workforce development around here, I mean, he mentioned this job fair they just had with around 3,000 seniors in high school and 80-plus employers there to talk with them about their next step in life, and some really good money available and some trades coming basically right out of high school.
A lot of kids that are looking at the possibility of going to college and universities don't seem to have as much of the allure when you look at a lot of, I mean, just go ahead and figure out those who have most recently graduated, how quickly were they able to find a job and what they studied.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to find a lot of them are on the sidelines, and they're still at mommy's house or whatever. And I don't have all the data on that, but AI is going to be playing a role in a lot of careers.
It is. And I was just watching, I wish I remembered who it was. It was one of these Twitter videos that just popped up, and it was this fella talking about how AI is already leading to white collar jobs
mm-hmm.
just being, I don't know if decimated at this point is the correct word for that, but they're losing jobs quickly.
Yep.
And he was saying, hey, blue collar is where it's at. And that, I know that's something that's been said for years now, like, hey, don't waste all your money going to college and get all that debt when you can go right into the trades. And I think that's too black and white. There are certainly some people that would do well to go to college and get a degree and go about life that way. But it's hard for me to not look at a lot of my friends in high school who really, honestly, some of them didn't even want to go to college. And then they get right out into the workforce working in industry and are doing well and have continued to do well for themselves.
Some of the kids from Grove Hill.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Yeah. Interesting.
So, but also he was kind of yesterday talking about the big projects that we have coming up, like the bridge and the airport. And something about that interview yesterday just really fired me up about the future here in Mobile. And I know that we see stories every day that makes us think, oh, man, like population's leaving, this and that. But thought it was a really good
interview. It's almost like I don't want to be too pie in the sky about this, but when you read the text of the story, the Navy pumping $30 million into these community colleges, junior colleges, to specifically train this workforce up
mm-hmm.
so they can have a job. I mean, that sounds pretty promising. Here's a little bit of Bradley Byrne from yesterday with Sean.
Press conference we had this morning was with the $30 million that the Navy gave to some community colleges down here. You know, we've got jobs for them if they'll learn how to be a ship fitter or a pipe fitter or a welder. We have jobs that are only increasing. So our hope is over the next several years is that we can begin to capture more and more of our local people into these jobs because we're going to need them.
Yeah, you're going to have local people, local kids going to community colleges, learning these skills. It looks like the jobs are going to be waiting on them, or close to it, right?
Yeah.
Then they're staying in town. They're not moving away. They're not trying to find a greater life somewhere else. They're building it right here in Mobile and Baldwin County.
Yeah, and part of that is, and something that so many people have brought up, the number of workers at Austal or Airbus that live in Baldwin County
mm-hmm.
and then come over here to work, which makes the bridge even more pertinent to get that thing built and put up there. But just regionally, great news. And yeah, if Mobile County can benefit from that as well, with maybe more people moving in and offsetting that loss of population, I think that'd be fantastic. And it's hard to not see that coming as long as we can keep pace with the industry, because the industry is absolutely exploding right now.
Yeah.
Go to some text here. Earl says, do students have to choose between sports and the high school trade? Sorry, I thought, no, this is like, I mean, we do have more and more schools for high school age children focusing on those trades, which is absolutely really cool. But
in Baldwin County, I know they got the school specifically for mm-hmm. that. And I think in Mobile County, you have some of the schools that are being almost like foster kids of some of these industries. Maybe BC Rain's got an arrangement with Alstom or Airbus or something like
that. They're building planes at some of these schools. Mm-hmm. Texture here with a bit of a tongue twister. I was badly burned by Bradley Byrne. By Bradley Byrne. Okay, you got me now. Texture here. Don't forget the Southern Alabama Home Building Academy that's just started up free of charge, learning basic trade skills. Check it out online. We interviewed
George Spurlock
about that. And that's another one. You're exactly right. What a great project and program they have there. Fire Dog says the military has always been 80-85% Republican, so I would expect that there would be more Republican politicians that served. I think that is pretty consistent now number of modern-day politicians that are retiring from the military and getting into politics.
Yeah, I would agree.
Matt says, morning, guys. Thank you all so much for reminding folks of today's vote. It really goes a long way. Yes, so Matt Waltman, chief of Seven Hills Fire District, votes today.
Polls at one place, right?
Polls are open, yes, at one place, and that is the Central Fire Station on Newman Road, 3650 Newman Road. This is about raising the levy, $75 to $150, because the growth has been explosive in that part of the county. And Seven Hills has just so many people that they're on call for now that raising those rates. And I think there are a lot of people behind that because they want to make sure that something happens that they have the fire district ready to roll and get to their house and help them out.
When we had those communities and citizens in West Mobile by district join the city of Mobile,
the annexation,
I'm not sure that the Seven Hills group, they stayed out.
Just outside of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In West Mobile.
Yeah.
A couple more texts here. CB Carl says the bottom line is the majority of our society has lost their couth, and I like the word you use there. I mean, and I know Trump was a big part of it, like I said, but you look at these Democrat politicians when they get out there on the stump now, and they're dropping F-bombs like Tipper Gore used to be upset with Slim Shady about. You know, she slapped that parental, or was it Two Live Crew that she put the first, she played a big role in putting the first parental advisory sticker on the CD covers.
You're right.
And I think we need that now for our politicians.
Yeah, they need an advisory sticker on Crockett.
Jim says, preach, Dalton. I expect my representatives, governor, president, on down to have a vocabulary that allows them to express themselves without cussing and vulgarity. Squirrel Vereen, speaking of ratings like PG-13, the problem with vulgarity is popularized, unregulated internet lingo. The wordy dirds are in acronyms and used everywhere. Yeah, I mean, I can say that now. The kids these days, I can't keep up with their terminology, Dan. They're using words I don't even know what they mean anymore.
Yeah, well, we were doing the same thing. You were befuddling your mom and dad in the same way, probably when you were 14, 15, just showing them how damn cool you were.
Yeah, but they didn't have a little secret cheat sheet called the internet like I do, where I can look up what those words mean.
852, Dan and Dalton, keep those texts coming, 251-343-0106. We'll look over Jeff's guest list on the Jeff Poor upcoming and wrap up our show straight ahead.
Mobile Bay starts its day with Dan Brennan and Dalton Orwig on Mobile Mornings.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings, 8:56. Jeff Poor Show on the way. He follows us.
Yeah, and leading off at 9 o'clock, candidate for Alabama Attorney General Jay Mitchell in the news today. We've been talking a lot about campaign ads this week. He had one that came out yesterday, and Islam kind of taking an outsized role in some of these ads. I'm surprised. It's not like we're in Dearborn, Michigan down here in Alabama or anything that.
But, you know, you can say Dearborn is in the United States, and this is the way some things are going, raise the alarm.
One of his lines there in the ad, something like, what was it? He said something about if you stand for the Middle East. He basically said you can Allah Akbar your butt back to the Middle East.
He did in his television ad.
So
that's the man you're about to be listening to with Jeff Poor. Is he going to kick it off?
Kick it off at 9. Also, Michael Lackey with Alabama polls in hour 2, if I'm reading that correctly, which that's the poll I think we've been referencing this morning. Apologies if I'm off base on that, Jeff. And then Will Hampson with P2 Public Affairs to talk some politics in hour number three. All of that coming up on the Jeff Poor Show.
On the text line, we've got a gentleman who says, I'm 73. This is Martin, 73 years old, and I'm jealous of all the opportunities these kids have these days. I have twice the college education. He says that he just only did so-so in his life. Martin's not a, he's had a really... He's had an excellent career, so I would say that's a little false modesty. But he's been around. He sees the opportunity, right?
Yeah. And Squirrel Vereen texting in something I was alluding to. I don't know if it did a great job of it. And he said, "Yes, the world needs ditch diggers too, so to speak. But I get irked by people who comfortably work in air conditioned offices and often with high salaries, trying to romanticize manual sweaty labor. Both types require certain mindsets, and if someone can handle college." Let him. And I agree. I think there's a lot of people out there who are saying college is a complete scam. You just need to get into the trades, work your butt off. You'll be making tons of money in no time. And yeah, it's not for everyone. And college isn't for everyone either. I completely agree. But you'd have to say at some point, Americans kind of lost the plot on the blue collar stuff, right? It got a little too nice in the white collar world, and there were plenty of job openings for that. And then a lot of those blue-collar jobs went to immigrants. Yeah. And many of those immigrants, well-deserving, worked hard for it.
They went overseas or to immigrants here.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're right.
But the basic fact that there are so many more opportunities opening down here for industry in Southwest Alabama, I think that's something we could all applaud.
I think that you are right. It's 8:59. Dan and Dalton will crank it up in the morning. We're going to get 6 o'clock. Talk to you then.